The second case for oral argument this morning is in re South Dakota Microsoft antitrust litigation. For the appellant is David Tolchin. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, Your Honor.
I oftentimes don't pronounce names very well, so I guess. From New York City, and then you'll be making the presentation for...
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then Mr. Marino, attorney from Peer, will be on behalf of the plaintiff class, correct?
Correct.
All right. The court should also note for the record that Justices Zinner and Sabres have disqualified themselves, and the court has appointed the Honorable Tim Tucker, Circuit Judge from the First Circuit, or Third Circuit, to sit in the place of Justice Sabres, and the Honorable Robert A. Miller, former Justice of this court, to sit on behalf of Justice Zinner. With that, Mr. Tolchin, you may proceed. Sir, you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Again, my name is David Tolchin from Sullivan and Cromwell in New York. As the court knows, there were originally four civil actions filed in the courts of South Dakota, all of which alleged that as a result of alleged antitrust misconduct, alleged monopolization, Microsoft had overcharged for certain software. The cases were eventually consolidated, and in October 2003, Microsoft and plaintiff's counsel on behalf of a class entered into a settlement agreement to settle the dispute. That was the eighth case settled. There had been cases settled in seven other states, including in North Dakota, just 2 months earlier in August 2003.
When you settled those cases, how many of them did you leave open the question of attorney's fees?
All of them, Justice Meyer Henry, and for this reason, it was felt by the plaintiff's lawyers and by Microsoft that it would be improper to discuss the subject of attorney's fees prior to execution of a settlement agreement. So that there was no issue that the question of the fees that the plaintiff's lawyers would get were somehow bargained as against the interests of the class. So every settlement agreement contained a provision similar to the one here.
So was there any attempt to settle the attorney fee issue then separately?
Yes, Your Honor. And in many of these cases, the fee issues were settled.
How many of them? Is South Dakota the only one you haven't settled?
No, Your Honor. Most of the cases have resulted in agreements. In North Dakota, which was the settlement agreement entered into just prior to this one, we agreed on a fee, which was, it's in the record, $1,080,000 in total to the plaintiff's lawyers. And in many of the other cases, there have been a total of 16 cases in 16 different states that have been settled. In many of those, agreements were reached. We are litigating the issue of fees, I believe, in five states and have settled in 11. And I hope my recollection is correct there. That's simply from recollection.
Is there anything about South Dakota's jurisprudence on attorney's fees that created this not to be settled?
No, I don't think there's anything special about South Dakota jurisprudence. I think what caused the inability of the two sides to settle was that the two sides were very, very far apart. And in other jurisdictions, that has not been the case. We were able to discuss and reach agreement. I do think that, and this is the only issue on this appeal, the correctness of the circuit court's decision on fees, we believe that there are at least three very important reasons, three reasons that make a lot of difference to the amount of the award, why the trial court here got the issue of fees wrong. And I'd like to address first the question of the enhancement of a proper lodestar, what is sometimes referred to as a multiplier. The Alvine case against Mercedes-Benz from this court in 2001 does state that in cases where there has been, quote, exceptional success, unquote, it might be proper to award an enhancement. Here, for the reasons that we've stated in our brief and that I'll get to in a moment, we don't believe that applies. In fact, no case cited by either party on this appeal, no case from any South Dakota court, and we're aware of no case, has ever actually awarded any enhancement. The Alvine case identified circumstances where that might be proper. It's never been done as far as we know, and no case cited to this court has that fact. The multiplier itself, the circuit court here picked a multiplier of 2, that is doubled the amount of what the court believed the proper lodestar is. We'll come to that in a moment. That, of course, makes a difference of more than $1 million, or exactly $1,038,000.
Is your problem then with the multiplier that it's too high a figure, or that simply there should have been no multiplier, period?
The latter, Chief Judge Gilbertson. Our view is that there should be no multiplier at all.
Okay.
Certainly, if one were to be employed, it ought to be much less than 2. But we don't think this fits in the category of any multiplier being proper at all. The second error, in our view, was the question of how one gets to the proper lodestar. And in this case, the issue of hourly rates. The City of Sioux Falls against Kelly case sets forth the proper hourly rates to be used in compiling the lodestar, and that is, quote, the fee customarily charged in the locality for similar legal services, unquote. There was evidence in the record. We submitted the affidavit of Mr. Ryder. There is evidence in the record of Mr. LeBrun's fees. And the hourly rates of out-of-state lawyers of $500 and in some cases $600 or more dollars ought not to be used in compiling the lodestar. The third factor, if I may, is the disproportionality of the award of the fees with what the class was expected to get. And as the court may be familiar, in this case, the settlement provided that class members who were indirect purchasers, and I say that because, therefore, there was no record of who actually purchased Windows or other software that was at issue. Microsoft had no records. There was no readily accessible source of records, with the exception of a small percentage of the members of the class. No one knew who the class members were in South Dakota. This is so in other states as well. And as a result, class members would be required to submit claims. If a valid claim was submitted, they would obtain vouchers. And depending on the kind of software, the voucher would be for either $12 or $5. That voucher could later, in a later 4-year period, be redeemed for cash. And the evidence before the circuit court at the time that the settlement decision was made from both sides was that the claims rate was expected to be no more than 5% from class members, which would result in a voucher value of $466,000 if claims in the amount of 5% were made. Here, while class members were expected to get something around $466,000 at most, the lawyers were awarded almost 5 times that amount. There is, of course, the element of the Cypre vouchers that go to public schools. But again, we believe that the factor in the City of Sioux Falls case that this court identified of the results obtained necessarily speaks to the results obtained for the lawyer's clients. There is this Cypre element. But
can I ask you about that?
Certainly, Your Honor.
That does strike me as being a an extraordinary thing, especially if there was no other settlement that included that or award that included that kind of an aspect where the needy schools get these benefits. Was there any other state settlement that included this?
Every state, Your Honor, and all of these settlements, the seven that preceded this one, and now all 16 of them, are similar or identical in structure. There are some settlements where the voucher values are somewhat different, although this settlement is exactly the same as the North Dakota settlement and some of the others. Every one of these settlements contain this concept of CyPRE vouchers, which would go to the neediest public schools of the state in question. And I may say that it was Microsoft's view from the very outset, from the first settlement, which was in Montana, that because everyone anticipated that the claims rate would be low, there is no list of who these indirect purchasers might be, Microsoft thought that it would be appropriate to get to the needy public schools of these states vouchers that could be used to purchase not just software, but hardware as well, and software from any vendor.
So there's nothing really about the CyPRE vouchers for the schools in South Dakota that's unique.
No, it's exactly the same. I think the only difference here is that public schools were defined to include tribal schools, and that was not always the case in other states.
Will all of those vouchers to the schools be returned?
Judge Tucker, we expect so, and we hope so. The way that works is that 50% of the difference between the theoretical maximum value, here it's $9.3 million, and the amount claimed goes to the schools in the form of vouchers. Microsoft has committed to work with the education department of the states in question to try to ensure that those public school vouchers get redeemed for cash.
So that approximately $4.6 million will actually be expended.
Correct. And the overall value of the settlement should be looked at in that context. That's not a benefit that went to the class members, but it is a benefit, and it is a value to the settlement.
Well, my understanding, how we normally would review a trial court's award of attorney's fees is an abuse of discretion standard. And
yes,
in this case, the circuit judge made certain findings, one of which was that this was a circumstance that a multiplier needs to be used. She cites to a California case in her findings. Do you want to address that?
Yes. The California case against Microsoft, where a multiplier of two was employed. California law in this respect, as in many other respects, I might say, is somewhat different from the laws of most other states, including, in our view, South Dakota. But it's correct that an abuse of discretion standard is the proper standard of review. Of course, an error of law is by definition an abuse of discretion. And here on the question of the multiplier, again, the Alvine case refers to cases of exceptional success. This was a case where the settlement agreement was similar to or identical to all other settlements. The California settlement was a little bit different. The voucher values were much higher. They go as high as $25 or $30 instead of $5.12. And the California lawyers were the first lawyers in the country to bring this sort of suit against Microsoft. They brought it before even Judge Jackson's findings of fact, and it was those findings of fact which stimulated lawyers around the country everywhere else to bring suit. They were the lead lawyers among the state lawyers, along with the federal MDL lawyers in Baltimore, to prosecute these actions and to take the discovery of Microsoft, the merits discovery. So I do think the California case is in a rather different circumstance. And the comparison that this court has made in the Dooley case and the Kappenman case between fees of defendants' lawyers, those were both divorce cases, where what the court did was compare the overall fees of the defendants with the fees that the plaintiff's wife's lawyer was seeking to have paid by the defendant. Here, Microsoft fees, in this case, were $455,000, which happens to be quite close to the expected value to the class of $466,000, and also quite close to what we would contend a proper lodestar would be when proper hourly rates were used, again, rates typical in the locality. That is somewhere around $450,000 is where all those numbers converge, instead of a number well in excess of $2 million, which is where the trial court came out.
Was there more litigation in this one? Because it did come to this court once before.
Yes, Your Honor, it did. And Justice Meyer Henry, the only thing that the plaintiff's lawyers point to in terms of litigation here was class certification. With all respect, there was less litigation in this case than in many others. And on the class certification motion, certification was granted by the circuit court at a time when five other courts had also certified classes in other states, including North Dakota, against Microsoft. And on that motion, the plaintiff's lawyers repeatedly pointed out that at that time, every court that had considered the issue had granted certification. They used the same expert on class certification that had been used in California. They simply submitted the same affidavit that had been used before. And while there was some very limited discovery on class certification, and Microsoft then appealed, this court heard that appeal and affirmed, that's the only activity in this case that the plaintiffs point to as justifying a fee of more than $2 million. And of course, that occurred in many, many of these states, similar class certification litigation. If I may, I know my initial time is rapidly running out, to turn to the question of hourly rates. And here we think it's quite clear that the trial court used an improper standard. Judge Wilbur recognized that the fees requested by class counsel, quote, while higher than the rates customarily charged in South Dakota for some types of legal services, are not unreasonable, unquote. And we think this is just the wrong standard. We submitted to the trial court the affidavit of Robert C. Ryder, Jr., an attorney practicing here in Pierre. He expressed the view that the prevailing hourly rate should be between $150 and $175 per hour. He left room for the possibility that in specialized areas of the law, it might be somewhat more than that. When we submitted Mr. LeBrun's bills, his hourly rate was shown as $225. And what the trial court did was say that out-of-state lawyers who practice in South Dakota in a case like this should be reimbursed at their normal out-of-state rates. California lawyers at $500 or $630 in one case, and Mr. Barnow from Chicago at $500. That difference alone, the difference between Mr. LeBrun's $225 hourly rate and Mr. Barnow's $500 hourly rate, makes a difference of about $400,000 to the lodestar because of the tremendous amount of time that Mr. Barnow had logged and had allocated to this case from his work in general on the Microsoft cases around the country.
Would it make a difference if the lawyers from out of state, Chicago, California, contacted the local lawyers for their assistance locally in handling these cases, or vice versa, whether the local lawyers contacted the out-of-state lawyers and asked for them to be involved? In other words, I mean, well, I guess what concerns me is, say a Chicago lawyer says, I need local counsel, Why should the Chicago lawyer have to give up what his usual customary fee is in Chicago because he's asking local counsel to help in South Dakota?
Well, if he brings suit here and asks the opposing party to pay his fees, then this court's jurisprudence, and this is true in many states, is that the hourly rate that goes into the figure of the lodestar must be typical in the locality. In some cases, there has been this sort of inquiry, Justice Konenkamp. The inquiry is there a situation where no lawyer in South Dakota was willing to do this work, willing or able, or had the experience to do this work? And where evidence of that sort has been submitted to a trial court, higher rates for lawyers in Chicago or New York or California have been permitted. There was no such evidence here. Mr. Ryder's affidavit was unresponded to. No evidence was submitted by these lawyers.
To you, it would make no difference whether the lawyers in Chicago contacted lawyers here or vice versa.
Correct.
You're still bound by the South Dakota rates.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I don't know which is the fact here. There's no evidence in the record on the subject. I don't think it makes a difference.
Your time has expired, Mr. Tolson. Thank you,
Your Honor.
Mr. Marino, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you. May it please the court, Justice Meyer Henry, you asked about settled cases and how many left fees open. Microsoft's practice in that regard is to have some kind of an informal arrangement before the final approval, obviously subject to final approval, and then after the final approval, negotiate in a hard form that actual arrangement. And that's exactly what Microsoft did. If you look at the record that we compiled, Microsoft, in all of these cases, they say that this is a tag-along action. They say that we piggybacked off of Department of Justice case. If that is true, then why is Microsoft paying these huge fees in all of these other cases? Montana, for example, a case where there was no class certification contest, there was no appeal, there was no nothing. Microsoft is paying in excess of $1 million enhancement in that case. We look at West Virginia, another case, and both of these cases are cited in Judge Wilber's findings. Microsoft is paying about 20% of the, quote, theoretical maximum rate. Microsoft says, well, gee, the Attorney General was involved in that case. It doesn't matter. The Attorney General provided legal services for the plaintiff class, the people of West Virginia, and was paid as well, just like any other class. What have other courts done in these cases? For example, in Arizona and in New Mexico. In Arizona, and there was a fee contest in Arizona, so we had a litigation on the merits of fees. The court awarded $19.1 million in a, quote, tag-along action, the same type of arguments that Microsoft raises here in the face of these same type of arguments. The lodestar in Arizona was $5.6 million. The enhancement, the multiplier, was 3.42. This was court ordered, and it amounted to $13.6 million. Now, I'm told that case is on appeal, but that was the award of the Arizona court. What happened in New Mexico? New Mexico, we have a similar type of situation where the fee award is $6.1 million. The lodestar is $2 million, and the enhancement is $4.1 million, a multiplier of 3, in a tag-along action. Microsoft tries to lump us together with all of these other cases and say that we are the same, we're no different. Then why is Microsoft agreeing to these prejudice type of enhancements, and why are courts ordering them in these cases? Florida, which is a case that we cite in our brief, it's the Barnhill or Barnhart case. That's the only appellate court decision that we have on fees in this context, in a Microsoft case. The court affirmed a fee award of $15.5 million in Florida with a lodestar of $8.8 million. and a fee enhancement of $6.7 million.
What were the numbers of the class? I mean, South Dakota's much lower population. Arizona, New Mexico, Florida have much bigger populations, don't they? Does that make a difference then?
We don't think that it does, and certainly South Dakota is on par with Montana. Montana's, last I looked, was a little over 900,000, and we're about 760 or so thousand here. We're close to North Dakota. Certainly, we have more people here, and Microsoft paid the people in North Dakota a lot more money than they maintain that we're entitled to here as well. And you look at other states. We have Nebraska, which I understand Microsoft just reached an agreement in Nebraska. I don't know if Mr. Tulchin is aware of the specifics. I assume he is, but that case is awaiting final approval, I'm told, in November. And there's been fee discussions, and I'm told by my counterpart that fee arrangements have been reached based on this theoretical maximum. In our case, it's $9.33 million. In Nebraska, it's $22 million. They're coming up with a fee agreement based on this theoretical maximum rate. So when Microsoft says that this 9.33 or this theoretical maximum doesn't mean anything, it certainly does mean something. It's a benchmark that Microsoft is using to come up with their own, quote, reasonable fee that they will offer or agree to. I want to talk a little bit about the enhancement or the multiplier, because I think that's somewhat important. The courts, as I mentioned just a moment ago, have awarded multipliers in every single case that have been before them. Microsoft has agreed to multipliers in every single case. We think that it's disingenuous for Microsoft now to stand before this court and say, oh, all the cases are the same, but despite the fact that a multiplier is given in every other case, we don't think one is appropriate in this case. The multipliers have ranged from about 1.77 on the low end to about 4 on the high end. Montana and West Virginia are on the high end. Tennessee, 2.67. Minnesota, our neighbor to the north and east, 2.50. And then Arizona, I mentioned, and New Mexico were 3.42 and 3.
What was North Dakota?
North Dakota was just under 2, and I can give you the exact amount here in a second. 1.95.
Now, have these been part of settlements, or have they actually been approved or reviewed by a court?
Well, Your Honor, as you know, in the class action context, unlike, say, in a personal injury or malpractice, all of the lawyer's fees have to be submitted to a court and reviewed de novo and approved. So it's not a situation where you cut a deal for $1 million in a personal injury case, you back the fees out of $1 million, and you get paid pursuant to your contract. We're getting paid pursuant to our contract, but our contract says we get whatever the court says is appropriate. So unlike every other case, and that's what makes antitrust class action or class actions in general different, is they all have to be run through and approved by a judge who reviews them de novo. It's not a rubber stamp, and in fact, Judge Wilbur didn't approve all the fees that we asked for. She gave us about a 35% cut. We asked for $3.1 million, and she gave us about $2.064.
But there are situations where you have agreed, or where they may have agreed and not stipulated to the amounts that are due. Is that right or not?
I think what has happened, Your Honor, is two things. A, Microsoft either hasn't agreed, and there's been a hearing on the merits, and a court has decided, or Microsoft has agreed kind of informally, and then when it's presented to the court, Microsoft says we don't object or contest it, which I believe is acquiescence or tantamount to a stipulation. Getting back to the multiplier, in this case, Microsoft talks about us having an hourly rate of $600 and $1,000, $600 for myself and $1,000 for Mr. Barno. That's not true. That's not what Judge Wilbur approved. What she approved is a rate for me at $300 and a rate for Mr. Barno at $500. Now, did she enhance that? Yes, she did. Did she do so properly? Yes, she did. Why? Why was an enhancement appropriate in this case? First, this was a case that involved an enormous amount of risk and contingency. I find it rather interesting that Microsoft says these cases are all the same and we didn't have any risk. The last time I was up here arguing before this tribunal and Mr. Casper was arguing, he was talking about how South Dakota was so much different. You can't look at these other cases. They're distinguishable as far as the law is concerned. They're distinguishable as far as the facts are concerned. You can't rely on what courts have done elsewhere. Now Microsoft is saying, gee, all we did was jump on their backs and ride the pony to the finish line. So what Microsoft has made similar arguments to Judge Zinter when he was the trial judge. He made it to this court, and they've made those same arguments to Judge Wilbur below, as the record will indicate, and in particular, the June 14th transcript will reflect. So we had enormous amount of risk here. In fact, as some of you may recall, Mr. Casper argued previously that their expert, Professor Hausman, an MIT professor, said that our chances of prevailing were impossible. We weren't going to win on the merits as far as liability, and we certainly weren't going to be able to prevail in terms of proving damages on a class-wide basis. So we also need to bear in mind is this is Microsoft. This is a huge Fortune 500 company. Any lawyer in this state, our little humble state of 760,000 going against a company with billions and billions of dollars of revenue, you're taking on enormous risk just by doing that, by taking these people on and expending money out of your pocket.
Why?
Why?
What does the population have to do with that?
Well, because we don't, generally speaking, there are very few lawyers in South Dakota that handle antitrust cases. There are very few that are willing to take on Microsoft and expend money out of their own pocket. In this state, you're much less likely to see a lawyer take on Microsoft than you would in New York, in Chicago, or California. Those states that have a lot of lawyers have greased operations. They know how to take care of these people. They also have more revenue, more economies of scale that they can look to try to fund a prosecution against a giant like that.
Conceding that, how does that increase the enormous amount of risk to the class in South Dakota just because of its population?
Well,
I'm not following your logic, I'm sorry.
What I'm saying, Justice Miller, is that in a state like this, you're going to be less likely to see lawyers fight Microsoft.
I agree.
All right? And the lawyers here are generally not as well greased in antitrust law, and I will confess 8 years ago maybe or 7 years ago, I wasn't. I've learned a great deal vis-a-vis this case. I'm going up against Microsoft, who hires Ms. David Tulchin, who handles these things on a daily basis.
Are you doing it alone?
I'm doing it with outside counsel.
Okay.
And
who has all of the skills, presumably, is Mr. Tulchin?
Yes. One of the differences, however, as you will note in the record, is Microsoft is not having their local counsel write the briefs, orally argue the cases twice, and twice, once before Judge Zinter and once before Judge Wilbur. I'm doing it. I've taken the bull by the horns and pursued this. Yes, I've received a great deal of assistance from my out-of-state counsel. The difference here is Microsoft has relied exclusively on its out-of-state counsel to pursue this case. Mr. Tulchin is calling all the shots. The out-of-state lawyers are arguing the cases, are writing the briefs. Mr. LeBrun is the local counsel. The local counsel here for the plaintiffs is the hands-on lead counsel that's carrying the torch in this case. That's one of the differences. And I don't, quite frankly, Justice Miller, think that you would see many lawyers that would want to take on something like that, the burdens, the contingencies, the risks. If you look at the statistics, for example, and in the antitrust area, the success rate is between 10% and 28%. So what does that mean? That means 3 out of 4 of these cases, we're probably going to lose, best scenario, or 1 out of 9, we're going to lose. So in that respect, there's a great deal of risk involved. And when you're dealing with an opponent who stands up before this tribunal and says it's impossible for them to prevail on liability, it's impossible for them to prevail on damages, yes, there is risk. And Justice Konenkamp, you certainly told us that this was a risky business case in your concurrence in the first case. You and Justice Amundson said, I believe, that we had a thin hold on class certification. That we, you know, and I think also either you or Justice Amundson said that if we're not able to prove our case and utilize our expert at a Daubert hearing in the way that we should, the case should be dismissed. That's enormous risk. You're sending a message to Microsoft that, hey, we've got more than a glimmer of hope here of prevailing, even though this court awarded class certification. So we have had to battle Microsoft every step of the way.
How many of the cases were the attorney generals of those states involved?
I can't answer that honestly. I don't know. I know they were involved in West Virginia.
Were they in North Dakota?
No, not to my knowledge.
So private attorneys have taken those cases then that you've cited here, most of them.
And in this case, I specifically contacted, at that time it was Attorney General Barnett and his office and Jeff Hallam, and asked them if they wanted to be a part of this case, and they did not. I don't know if it was a manpower or what the reason, but they did not. So it was left to us to pursue or not to pursue.
Before you leave this, and this is a real quick question, it just wasn't clear to me from the briefs. In talking about the hours, particularly of Mr. Barno, were his hours that you sought reimbursement for allocated hours or logged hours?
The allocated
hours actually worked on the South Dakota case, or hours that he had scientifically or arbitrarily allocated to the South Dakota case?
They
is
would
it
be allocated.
In the record,
they would be allocated. What he did, Justice Miller, is he provided Justice or Judge Wilbur all of his time for his work, and because he was a lead counsel in the MDL case, expended horrendous amount of time and money in that case. By the way, and that's something that I think is important. Microsoft talks about the fact that we collaborated with others, and that made this an easier case. Well, let's look at a state where there was no collaboration, California. What happened in California? The fees were $101 million. The Lodestar was about $50 million, a little over $50 million, and the enhancement was a little over $50 million. That's what happens when you don't have collaboration. The California lawyers took it upon themselves to handle that case on their own. And Microsoft did not object to a Lodestar, a multiplier of 2 and to $50 million in enhancements. In our case, we have a Lodestar of a little over $1 million. Why? Because we engaged in collaboration. We had the Ben Barnells, who had the ability to utilize resources. He was in charge of one of the leaders of the discovery process in the MDL. By the way, the MDL, the direct MDL, is another case where Microsoft paid huge fees. $10 million case, they paid $10.5 million in fees to the lawyers. So my point is, when we collaborate and we work with others, it benefits Microsoft. Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates don't have to get deposed 25 times. We band together and we have economies of scale, and we put together a group and we can all share and assign the discovery and the work in the case. That just makes good sense. Not only that, that's what Judge Zinter ordered us to do. He required us to collaborate and to stay together. Probably in Judge Zinter's wisdom, recognized that something like California could occur. where you're without collaboration, you're spending a huge amount of money through Microsoft. A couple of things I want to say. I know my time's running out. Microsoft says that this case is, and I'm not sure how much they're valuing the case. What the way we value the case is we look at how much the class is going to get, how much the CyPRE or the schools and the needy school children are going to get. We look at the total benefit, and that includes the fees, that includes the notice and the settlement administration costs and the costs of litigation. When you look at that entire package, you're at about $7.6 million. If we want to look at the one-third as a benchmark, just for the sake of discussion, the 2.064 is about 27% of $7.6 million.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Moreno, the class that you were certified to represent received only somewhat over $400,000.
Well, they are expected to receive somewhere, I think, 466, if I remember Microsoft's brief correctly. We don't know exactly how much they're going to receive, but we can't take out of the equation the CyPRE, especially when Microsoft insisted that it be part of the settlement, and we believe was one of the reasons why Judge Wilbur approved the settlement, because there was this enormous amount of money for school children who desperately need it in this state. We don't need to talk about that. But you can't ignore the CyPRE and what's being done for the schools, and that's something that we help negotiate and bring about.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank
Your time
you.
Has expired. Mr. Tolchin, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I think the first and very important point, if I might, when Appellee's brief was first filed earlier this year, it contained assertions about many of these other cases and settlements that were entirely outside the record. And a great deal of what Mr. Moreno just said in the first 10 minutes of his argument about Arizona and New Mexico and California and West Virginia is entirely outside the record. We moved to strike his brief for that reason, because there's nothing in the record from the trial court on these matters, and our motion was granted. I hold in my hand the order signed by the Chief Justice on May 6, 2005, directing that Appellee file a new brief and appendix to remove these references. A great deal of what Mr. Moreno said is not in the record. We don't agree with his assertion about the facts. And importantly, the material about North Dakota is in the record. And there again, it was a settlement. After the settlement agreement was signed and executed, and after preliminary approval was given by the court, we discussed with the lawyers in North Dakota how much their lodestar was, what they thought would be an appropriate amount, and we agreed to pay them, and this is in the record, $1,080,000. We were unable here to reach any such agreement. The population of the two states is very similar. South Dakota's face value, that is this theoretical maximum, is $9.3 million. In North Dakota, it was $9 million. And I might say that the award in this case, of course, is more than double what we agreed to in North Dakota. But a settlement of a claim and the proper standard that a court should use in awarding fees are, with due respect, I think, quite different. It's also the case, while Mr. Moreno talks about the risk that he and his colleagues face in bringing this case, it's also true here that what Judge Wilbur did was to award counsel $100,000 in fees for work done after the settlement agreement was signed, when by definition there was no risk. We had agreed to a deal. She awarded that $100,000 and then doubled it, using a multiplier of two to enhance that at a time when certainly there was no risk. And I certainly understand the point that Mr. Moreno made about lawyers taking on a major corporation. It's something for which perhaps one might extend congratulations, but it has nothing legitimately to do with the question of enhancing fees. The Alvine case, which I mentioned before from this court, says that those fees should be enhanced only in cases of exceptional success. And no one here can say that there was exceptional success. They don't say it themselves. In view of the 7 prior settlements, including North Dakota, that were identical or close to that.
Could I ask you a question about that?
Certainly.
Perhaps I misheard you or you misspoke. I had you in your initial argument saying that there have been no cases which use the enhancement.
In South Dakota.
Oh, in
yes.
South Dakota, okay.
Yes, Justice
okay,
Miller.
Thank you.
I hope I was clear about that. Neither side cited, and we are aware of no cases in the courts of South Dakota where a multiplier has been used.
That's
certainly, there are decisions elsewhere.
Okay, thank
the Jaros decision from Judge Pearsall in the federal court, the District of South Dakota, which we cite in our brief, J-A-R-O-S, is a case where Judge Pearsall deals with the same question of whether a multiplier should be used and says that only in the rarest cases, his language is, an enhancement is warranted only in rare and exceptional cases. 171 F sub 2nd 992 at page 1008. That's a 2001 decision from Judge Pearsall in Sioux Falls in the federal court. And that's consistent with the Alvine case, and I think consistent with our point from the very outset. Yes, it's appropriate to consider risk. Risk is something that is built into the fees, after all, when they're awarded. It may be something that should be built in to hourly rates, but only in the rarest and most exceptional cases where great success has been achieved for the client should a multiplier be used. And I might say that the Crisman case from this court, C-R-I-S-M-A-N, 687 Northwest 2nd, 507 at page 515. This is from last year, 2004. That was a case where the plaintiff's lawyer was asking for fees to be paid by the defendant. It was a case seeking back wages. And a judgment for plaintiff was entered, a litigated judgment, in the amount of $4,500 and some. The lawyer for the plaintiff asked the defendant to pay his fees in an amount of more than $35,000. In other words, something in the order of 7 times the judgment for the plaintiff. This court commented that there was that disproportion, the same disproportion that we've referred to. The language used is that the fee requested does not compare favorably, unquote, to the amount recovered by the client. The same principle, I think, applies here. When the vouchers that the class was expected to obtain are $466,000, again, that's not cash. Those are vouchers that can be redeemed for cash later on. And the lawyers have received an award to be paid by the defendant of more than $2 million.
Well, now, these vouchers, that's just like a coupon towards your next purchase of a product, correct? You can't take it to the bank like a check and cash it.
Correct. You cannot. It's a little different from a voucher, if I can just explain, in that you can use it to purchase, you can use it as against purchases of hardware or software. It doesn't have to be Microsoft product at all. But other than that, yes, Your Honor, you're correct.
But it has to be computer related. You can't go buy a tire
That's correct.
With it or something. All right.
Hardware or software for computers. And so that disproportion here is particularly, I think, relevant under the circumstances where presumably the courts in this state, as in others, are sensitive to the idea that the public ought not to perceive class actions as being for the benefit of the lawyers, or at least primarily the lawyers, that there ought to be some proportion to the fees that a court awards to plaintiff's counsel for a class and the benefit that his clients have received.
Now, the plaintiff says that we need to take into consideration the Cypre award in determining this adequacy of their fees. How do you respond to that?
Well, Judge Tucker, I don't disagree that one can consider the Cypre amount. Mr. Marino just said, and he's correct, that Microsoft insisted in the settlement that there be a Cypre component, as there was in all these settlements, in order to get a benefit to the schools. It's fine to consider the Cypre element, but not to rank it in equal value to what the clients themselves get. In other words, the vouchers to the schools, sure, they should be considered in awarding fees. But in a situation where the disproportion is this dramatic, I don't think that the Cypre element should, in effect, overwhelm the key point of what the clients actually are expected to receive. My last point, if I may, I see there are 30 seconds left, is that, yes, Justice Miller, Mr. Barnow's time was allocated from time that he logged to all the Microsoft cases on a 20% basis. Our contention is that those are not fees that were expended for work here, but if there is to be some allocation, it should be on a 1/8 basis, 12.5%, because Mr. Barnow was working on 8 Microsoft cases simultaneously. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, counsel. Court will be in recess till tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and we will conduct a rules hearing.